Hello and welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show on this Monday, September 4th of 2023, Labor Day. If you're working like me, like John Bellmer and Rashawn Mapes behind the glass on this Labor Day, shout out to you. If you're not, I'm envious of you. I am jealous. And look, the reason I'm here is because I care. We had a football games to react to this past weekend. We had an Astros-Yankees series that going into the year was supposed to mean something. So, I am here on this day of all days. And my grandfather is probably rolling in his grave right now. This was a big sticking point for my grandfather, who was worked on the docks in Philadelphia, World War II vet. And he would get pissed off at anybody who would do anything that involved buying something on Labor Day. This was the one day that you don't do anything. So I'm probably going to make him even more mad when I go grocery shopping a little bit later and do some other dumb stuff. Anyway, guys, what is going on? A lot of stuff to react to in the world of college football. Deion Sanders from Colorado are going to be fun as hell this year. They sure delivered with that Saturday game. We'll talk about Brian Kelly and LSU crapping themselves as well last night. We're only a couple of days away from the start of the NFL season, but we have to start by talking about the Houston Astros, who got swept. And this is another sweep at home against a team that, at the very least, you think you should win two or three against. But now in this season series against a crappy Yankees team, you go 2-5. You lose 6-2 Friday, you lose 5-4 Saturday, you lose 6-1 Sunday. Through it all, they're very fortunate to be just one game out of first place because the Mariners lost 2 of 3 to the Mets. Maybe that Run DMC garb wasn't the best idea, and the Rangers lost 2 of 3 to the Twins. So, technically, they're in third place, a little bit behind the Rangers, and one game back of the Seattle Mariners. And in times like this, a lot of people are going to look for someone that's very easy to point the finger at and blame. And that person today, for a lot of people, is Dusty Baker. And look, I don't have any rationalizations for some of the decisions he made this weekend. Friday, Chaz McCormick didn't play. Jake Meyer's day. No Michael Brantley as well, though he did get to pinch hit a little bit later. Then you have Saturday, a sequence that has confused a lot of people. You got two outs in the ninth. You got one runner on. You got Chaz McCormick about to come to the plate. Oh, wait, no. Let's pinch hit John Singleton for him in a move that some would call trolling. After the game at his post-game press conference, Dusty Baker was asked about pinch-hitting Singleton for McCormick.
Well, I don't really like anybody against Holmes, really. I mean, this guy's tough. He's really tough on righties. And our projection said that, you know, Singleton's projected at 275 and Chaz is like 220. So, you know, you got it. I mean, you know, we lost that game long before then. You know, we were just hoping that the matchup was, you know, was good, because nobody really hits Holmes. I mean, he's tough on righties and lefties, but lefties are hitting 100 points higher, you know, on OPS than righties.
Sometimes when you talk, the more you talk, the less believable you are. I really think Dusty should just go, though. We did what's in the best interest of the team here. But that said, it's John effing Singleton, the guy who is barely in the major leagues. A follow-up question was asked about this specific decision a little bit later in the game. Here's Dusty Baker doubling down on Singleton for McCormick Saturday night.
Holmes had got a nasty sinker, and, you know, he'll run that ball in on Chaz. And so I thought, I mean, sometimes I go with that. Sometimes I go with how a guy's swinging. And then sometimes, you know, I go with how I feel, you know. And that's why we got Singleton up here, really, you know, to have tough at-bats against the tough righties.
Okay. You want the tough at-bats against the tough righties? Okay. Well, I don't know if he is one, but hey, I'm not one to freak out about Dusty Baker decisions, you know? I'm just not. And a lot of people are focusing on that Saturday night. Okay, fine. Then you also have on Sunday, after Yiner Diaz hit his 20th home run of the season on Saturday, a column from Chandler Rome on The Athletic asking if he'll crack the everyday lineup. He did not. And then you got one more Dusty Baker quote for the road before the Astros and Yankees series finale. This is Dusty Baker explaining the playing time for an outfield that features not as much Chaz McCormick as a lot of people would like, a lot of sprinklings of Jake Meyers, a lot of sprinklings of Mauricio Dubon.
Depends on what I need, you know. If you need defense, if I need an arm, if I need a bat, depends on who's pitching, depends on the stadium, depends on how guys do. I mean, it's easy if you got a Julio Rodriguez, you just put him out there in center field. But, you know, each one brings something different to the table, you know, plus and minuses. I mean, this has been a tough situation, and also to keep them sharp and us win and be productive.
Okay. So if they had Julio Rodriguez, it'd be a little bit easier. I want to say one more time, I do not have the energy to get mad about Dusty Baker's day-to-day lineup decisions that a lot of you guys do. But we'll get to that a little bit later. I instead want to react to a couple of, let's just say, manifestos by some of my coworkers here at ESPN 97.5. Two guys that I will acknowledge know a lot more about baseball than I do. First off, from Late Hits, Patrick Creighton tweeted, "I love Dusty, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to this year, he is way off the reservation this season. It's not just the lineups. It's not just what seems like a deliberate decision to sit Chaz and Diaz way more than anyone else in all of baseball would even consider. The bullpen decisions, his absurd faith in Montero early, the overuse of Abreu, Neris, and Maton in the first half. It's not just the deliberate avoidance of consistent empirical data over several categories. It's all of that," concluded Patrick Creighton. "Joe Spott has got to be the manager of this team next year." And then Jeremy Branham from the Killer Bees, now 3-6 here, ESPN 97.5, had a similar series of questions about Dusty Baker and his lineup decisions. And all that's fair, right? But here's where I guess I'm going to zag and just continue to feel the same way that I did. These guys sucked this weekend. Justin Verlander allowed 4 home runs, and the Astros had 4 hits on Friday. Is that Dusty's fault? Saturday, Hunter Brown took 40 pitches to get 4 effing outs. He only gave you 4 innings. He walked 6 guys along the way. Excuse me, the Astros walked 6 guys over the course of that game. Yeah, at the end of the game, Chaz McCormick probably gives you a better chance than John Singleton, to at least this baseball dummy. But your starting pitching sucked Friday, sucked Saturday. Yesterday, at the very least, you got a good performance from Christian Javier. He had 8 strikeouts, but only 4 Astros starters managed hits, and Jose Urquidy gave up 3 runs in the 9th. You lose 6-1. So I think we look for the convenient person to blame after the Astros get swept in Dusty Baker. And this is not me being a Dusty Baker apologist. I have no rationalization for those things that I listed a little bit earlier. All I'm trying to say is, I feel like he is the easy target when in reality, this team just crapped itself. They played like crap over the weekend. Maybe they took the Yankees lightly. Honestly, I would have too. I didn't want to watch this series. I did mainly out of spite towards the New York Yankees. And there were a lot of Yankee fans that were there at the park. But I think that sort of is consistent with where we're all at. Like, we don't really care that much about the Yankees, and maybe the Astros overlooked the Yankees. And I don't know, do we need another team meeting with Martin Maldonado? Maybe that will help things out. Maybe that will right the ship. But I get Dusty frustration. Dusty Baker is not the reason that the Astros got swept this weekend. He's not. They couldn't pitch. They couldn't hit. And they better clean that up, because this is the biggest series of the season these next 3 days against the Texas Rangers, who did not play well themselves over the weekend. I mean, it took Astros killer Adolis Garcia to make up for a blown save by the Rangers yesterday. Yet another one. Their bullpen is just absolute crap. For them to actually get a win and to avoid being swept themselves. So, am I out of line here in saying the Dusty Baker attackers maybe need to slow their roll after these three games? I get it. I'm not even telling you you're wrong. I'm just saying it's easy to blame Dusty Baker for this weekend. But the reality is the starting pitching sucked and the bats didn't hit enough. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in and to text in. Let me tell you about my friends at the Pendleton Whiskey People. These guys are awesome. You know, maybe you're watching the end of the Astros getting swept by the Yankees, and you're like, I need something to take the edge off, because I'm a little bit too angry about John Singleton pinch hitting on a Saturday night with two outs, which, again, is crazy. It is really crazy. Well, luckily, I had the extremely refreshing, not too sweet greatness that Pendleton Whiskey brings to the table every single time you pour yourself a glass of that. It's defined what it's meant to be a cowboy, just like the Pendleton Roundup, one of the oldest rodeos in the world, and it captures the unique spirit.
713-780-3776.
Yeah, we working on Labor Day today. Eric the driver texts in. We do Labor Day. We do labor on Labor Day just to show the man they can't hold us. Hell yeah. That's why we do it. That's why. Pinche says, you call that work, Paulie? Yeah, I had to get up. I didn't go out last night. I wanted to. I was tempted to go to Drift to go watch LSU. Jeez, that game escalated a little quickly in the second half, huh? Another texter. Hey, Paul, glad you're on the air, but also glad you used up your vacation days. Now, good point, but to be fair, it is football season officially, and if I'm off during football season, it is because of either some person who selfishly scheduled a wedding without talking to me about it being during football season, or like a family emergency happened. I don't miss days during football season. No one is in this industry supposed to miss days during football season. Sean Mapes. John Belmer's in for Sean Mapes today, laughing behind the glass. See, John Belmer, he gets it. Working class. Man of the people.
Yeah, Sean.
Yeah.
Where you at?
Where you at, Sean? Oh, enjoying your vacation days that you didn't use up by the end of June? Oh, look at me. Some more texts. The last segment, I get frustration with some of Dusty Baker's decisions, but it did not result in an Astros sweep at the hand of the Yankees this past weekend. It just didn't. Like, I get it. Like, oh, all right, maybe Chaz McCormick has a better chance of hitting than John Singleton. But we're talking about baseball here, guys. We're talking about a sport that is based on low probabilities. So I see a lot of people out there saying, well, Dusty has definitively, with lineup decisions, cost X, Y, Z amount of games. And I'm like, okay, maybe, but let's remember that the alternatives in the lineups, we're not talking about some guy who's hitting like 500 or something like that. You do have to insert probability into it. And sometimes when you put a good hitter or a better hitter in a situation like that, sometimes he's more likely to get a hit, but I mean, doesn't always happen. And I'm not rationalizing what Dusty did over the weekend. I'm just saying there are these weird jump to conclusions where people believe that if a different lineup was written out for a game, that the results would have definitely been different. No, there's probably like a 30% chance, best case scenario, that it would have been different. Best case scenario. Anyway, some more comments here. King of all Twitches says, this team is tired and we'll have to work for it this year. They're beat up too, Yordan and Altuve. P.S. Flea says the Astros bats are as cold as a witch's boob in a brass bra. And Pinche says, I warned you, hosts, that the I don't know. It's FCC that the Yankees would love nothing more than to play the spoiler role. I'm blaming the jinxing hoax. Well, you can't blame me. I totally overlooked them. I didn't want to watch this weekend series. Like I didn't want to watch it at all. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh great, okay, so they're going to lose on Friday. Damn it. Well, that means I have to watch Saturday and Sunday. I don't want to watch baseball during football season. You've heard me say this before. If it's not playoff baseball, I don't want to watch it. I will watch this series that's coming up, and then the rest of the series this year is for the Astros. It's kind of like boring. Like, let's get to the playoffs. Anyway, Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Okay, so the Astros, at the very least, they're able to hang around in the American League West race. It's time for another episode of Rangers Watch. Sadly, we only got to use the, hey, the Astros are ahead of the Rangers, open once. So the Rangers almost got swept. I got to say, you are getting them at such a good time, the Astros. And I hope they had a team meeting, because I do think that there's a very good chance that they perhaps were not looking at this weekend series as seriously as the Yankees did. The Yankees, this was essentially their Super Bowl this past weekend. And to their credit, they did play well. Aaron Judge finally showed up, right? I mean, God, he was... That's the first time I've ever thought to respect Aaron Judge. He was very good over the weekend against the Astros. So, he didn't play well, but the Rangers and whatever the hell is going on, the bad juju there, and just the bad bullpen as it is, they are very, very shaky right now. So, I feel like you got a pretty damn good chance to take two or three from Texas, and then it's a matter of the final stretch of the season, which is very advantageous for the Astros, less so for the Mariners. The Rangers are somewhere in between the two teams when it comes to the schedule down the stretch. By the way, the Mariners lost 2-3 to the Mets over the weekend, in case you didn't know. So, I don't know. We've been talking a lot about Letterman jacket curses on this show over the course of the last month, because the Rangers have been awful since they had their cute little Letterman jackets. And the Mariners didn't wear Letterman jackets, but they all dressed up like team costume, like it's Halloween, for their weekend series against the Mets, who are dead. And they lost 2-3. Anyway. Something else happened on in yesterday's game. Let's be a little fun. Let's have some fun, right? You know, season's not over. There's plenty of time left. There was a funny moment that took place during last night's game. Although I guess you could argue that Yordan Alvarez being out as a result of fan interference is maybe something that could have cost the Astros. I don't know. I mean, there were two outs. Maybe he gets a solo shot. They still lost 6-1. But there was a fan interference moment, and Yordan was called out. And the one good, well, actually, ESPN did a couple of good things on last night's broadcast. But one of the two good things that ESPN did to keep an Astro fan engaged was they went and they found the man who interfered with that ball in left field. We're going to play, John, this interview, and we're going to like stop and go along the way. It was a very entertaining interview, but a lot of people were pissed off at this guy. Anyway.
So tell us about that play and how it developed.
So pretty much, I'm out here with my son. This is our first ever game. We just moved here to Houston literally in January. And I just wanted to make the moment special for him. As a father, I feel like it's my job to make sure that I give him the best moments. I apologize to the Astro organization. I didn't know it from, y'all got to understand, when it's dropping down, it looked like it's coming directly to you. So I reached, and my body went for what I know. But we did have a wonderful moment.
Okay.
Pause. Okay. Couple of things to dissect here. So we just moved. I want to say, I'm going to guess from Kansas City, because he was wearing a Kansas City Royals hat, here to Houston. Some people have been a little bit clicky when it comes to me jumping on the Astros bandwagon. I have lived here for 10 of the last 12 years, so I feel like I'm allowed. Are we allowing this guy on? He did apologize to the Astros organization there. And honestly, he was getting crushed. I saw Brian McTaggart say, like, how do you do that? Let's be honest. The average baseball fan is probably not completely on top of all the rules. I get it. Like, the smart baseball fan should know not to do that. But I think the average baseball fan, specifically this guy who's here with his kid, wants to get the foul ball for his kid, I'm okay with this guy. I'm okay with this guy doing it. It's not like it cost the Astros the game. It's not like it's Steve Bartman.
Don't they make like an announcement about it, though, telling all the fans not to do this?
They do, but do you listen to the announcement, Sean?
No.
John, like, how many times have you listened to what the flight attendant on an airline tells you? Never. You know, if you've ever flown, the funny thing is if you sit near the emergency exits, they get mad at you if you don't pay attention. But I'm like, I've been on the, I know. Been there, done it a lot. Now, maybe there's a lot of first-time flyers with me. And I think this guy was going to a baseball game for perhaps the first time. And you know what? I hope he and his son had a good time. Anyway, this interview continued, and I see already a lot of comments saying, well, Toby, you're not a baseball fan without telling me you're not a baseball fan. Whatever, guys. It's a Sunday, and he's having a fun time with his son. My God. Some of you people.
Oh, you should know what's going on. Oh, man, he doesn't even like baseball.
I don't even like baseball. Anyway, this interview continues. The man.
Okay, so you reach out, and what was the reaction that you heard right after the play was over?
The reaction was shock, disgust, happiness, sweat, a little bit of lust, baby.
Lust.
You feel me? I was in there feeling kind of hurt, because my fingers still shaking a little bit. The ball way heavier with the gravity. I'm not going to lie to you. Charlie Ray, we're going to be on TV, baby.
So, tell me, it looked like that you went away for a bit, and then you came back. How'd you talk your way back?
So, truthfully, Houston loves me, and I love Houston, and they cannot stop me from supporting the Astros. So, what happened was, almost had to give a bop, 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 bop real quick on them, but they wasn't listening, so I showed some love, and they let me come back. They really were just trying to make sure that I wasn't hurt, and that making sure that we didn't go off the rails. So, salute to the whole organization, great staff. They made sure that I was healthy and I was enjoying the game. They wasn't even making it serious.
Okay. So do they eject you if you interfere with a ball? I figure they eject you if you jump on.
No, usually they do. If you touch a ball, yeah, usually you get kicked out.
You get kicked out?
Oh, yeah, usually.
Oh, that's outrageous. You shouldn't get kicked out for that.
That's what usually happens. And a lot of times it results in like you not being able to come back to games for a while as well.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Okay, Nazi would be an extreme way to describe that, but if you're that, like, that sounds like something the Cincinnati Reds would do, or like the Baltimore Orioles, or one of these other like broke ass organizations with a douche as an owner. Okay, so he's fun, clearly. Like we like his vibe. I don't know if we love him. I feel like you might be a little bit premature saying like, I love Houston. Houston loves me. Some people think that you're the reason Yordan Alvarez was out. So I don't know if I can go that far. And he did call the Astros the Astroids.
They cannot stop me from supporting the Astros.
Astroids. But I don't know. I think we got to welcome him in. I think he's on the bandwagon. I say thumbs up. You text in thumbs up, thumbs down. John Belmer behind the glass. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs
he's
up.
All in.
We like his vibe. But we need to make sure that he's got an Astros hat next time around. That's what the Astros should have done. Get the guy a hat. Screw that Royals hat. We don't forget about 2015, Will Harris. Come on. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 3 days away from the start of the NFL season. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the five most intriguing teams for good and for bad in 2023. And... this guy could be a Texan? Huh? Paul Galacho, stick around.
Houston loves me, and I love Houston.
ESPN, 97.5.com. We keep getting away with it.
I want some more.
VertexBank.com. Member FDIC.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues on the Paul Galacho.
Whoa, we're 3 days away from Chiefs and Lions in Thursday night football as the Chiefs unveil the banner for, oh, is it Super Bowl 57? Honestly, I don't know. I forget already. The numbers have started to get tricky because it's the Roman numeral stuff. LV2? Something like that. Anyway, the last segment we asked, are we letting the Astros foul ball guy onto the Astros bandwagon? Because clearly he just moved to Houston. He had a Kansas City Royals hat on. And he did call the Astros the Asteroids. But he also did give like a couple of genuflectory comments. Is that a word? I don't know.
That's not a word.
It sounds good though, John Bellmer behind the glass. He sort of bent the knee multiple times in that interview, but he is the reason Yordan Alvarez was out, and he did call them the Asteroids. One texter says thumbs down. Another texter gave a thumbs up, but it's like a shrug thumbs up. I think he's on.
Well, wasn't the ball going to be caught anyways?
Yeah, I think so.
So what does it matter?
He was trying to... He probably thought he was helping the team out.
Also, I think he was faking the whole Asteroids thing, because he said Astros right first, and then he went into like... I'm on TV, let me put on a show mode. And then he said Asteroids.
Let him cook. Let him cook.
I know.
I like it. Okay. NFL time, guys. So, this is a story that popped up, I think, Friday morning. But Rick Stroud, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the Tampa Bay Times, he reported that this will likely be Texas A&M legend and Buccaneers wide receiver Mike Evans' last season in Tampa Bay. Now, what's intriguing about that is he will likely be available in free agency this offseason. And I wonder if this is a guy that the Houston Texans would think about. You definitely have to make a phone call. I wonder, though, if they'll actually do it, because when you take a look at the things that the New England Patriots have done, a lot of them apply to how Nick Caserio probably thinks, because he was a part of that organization for multiple decades. The Patriots never paid wide receivers. Never. They did a horrible job of drafting them, and they never paid them. I wonder if they would actually think about a Mike Evans as a wide receiver here. I gotta say, you're very unlikely, just with the way things are now, unless Cleveland has an absolute disaster of a year, you are unlikely to find yourself in a position to draft someone like Marvin Harrison Jr., who might be the best wide receiver prospect in a really long time. So with Mike Evans, you would be signing a guy who will turn 31 right before the start of next season, a guy who over the last... Check that. His entire career, he has had at least 1,000 yards receiving in every single season. He already has 81 touchdowns. Like, a lot of his numbers are pretty close, if they haven't already surpassed that of Andre Johnson. At age 31, would you want this guy? I wonder. I'll leave that up to you. I feel like it's unlikely that the Texans go after him just because the Patriots never paid wide receivers. But maybe I'll be wrong. On Thursday night, you got the Chiefs and Lions. Chris Jones is holding out, and Patrick Mahomes is only talking about guys in the room. But Andy Reid said, like, well, he might play on Thursday. He's asking for a lot, as is Nick Bosa. Here's something I wanted to do using mybookie.ag. These are my five most intriguing teams, both for good reasons and bad reasons, going into this season. Everyone knows about Kansas City. Everyone knows about Buffalo, though we'll talk about them in just a moment. And everyone knows about Cincy. Also, the Jets are getting a lot of hype. But of all the teams going into this year that, from an odds perspective, intrigue me, it's the Baltimore Ravens. I've long felt that Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, was able to get a lot out of Lamar Jackson. But sort of like with Colin Kaepernick, there was a shelf life to the ability he has to make an offense that's based on a quarterback who is unbelievably mobile. And there never was a next step as far as progressing Jackson as a passer. So now you got Todd Monken. And both Monken and Jackson have been loving each other up. Like, lots of quotation PDA over the last couple of weeks. And per mybookie.ag, promo code BET975, the Ravens are plus 930 to win the AFC and plus 1725 to win the Super Bowl. I don't know if I would actually make the bet, but I think of all the bets out there, if we're talking about futures, that is probably the most fun one. The one that's going to give you the most bang for your buck. Because they could potentially find themselves in a game with the Chiefs. I don't know if they outscore the Chiefs, but if there's no Chris Jones, okay, that maybe makes things a little bit easier. Buffalo, with the way that they looked in the playoffs last year, do you trust Buffalo on a week-to-week basis? I don't know. So Baltimore is the team that I'm most intrigued by going into the year. Teams I'm intrigued by because I think they're going to screw it up. The Jets and Dolphins. The Jets have no offensive line. And Aaron Rodgers is only thrown to Garrett Wilson. And you better believe that the Jets are loving the smell of their own farts right now. The Jets are really, like, just all breathing it all in, wafting it, getting high off their own supply. The Dolphins, I'd also put in that conversation because the Dolphins have had some unfortunate injuries. Teron Armstead, Jalen Ramsey. And on top of that, like, is Tua going to make it through the whole year? Odds are probably not. So those two teams, who actually have, I think, pretty high odds to potentially win the AFC, to win the Super Bowl, I'm not feeling it. I am feeling another AFC North team, though. And again, the North is a bit of a cluster bleep. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, plus 500 to win the AFC North with Mike Tomlin. They like what they saw from Kenny Pickett down the stretch. Plus 2,500 to win the AFC. I don't know. Again, we're talking about big plays. These aren't ones that I would actually move. I'm just giving you the options here, mybookie.ag. Did we get bored with Buffalo? So, the Bills are still good. They're still good. But I thought there was too much hype for them going into last year, but now we've gone in the complete opposite direction with the Bills. They're plus 850 to win the Super Bowl. Like, those are pretty good odds. They're plus 450 to win the AFC. I don't know. Maybe this is their year. I feel like they are being slept on. And it's weird because I get the Jets getting all of the shine because they're New York and they have Aaron Rodgers. But, and the Jets played the Bills tough last year when they had terrible quarterback situations. The Dolphins did too. But I don't know. I feel like the Bills are going to be more focused this year than they were last year. If I'm making a pick, I think if I'm making a Super Bowl pick, I think I might go with Buffalo this time around. Because I feel like the expectations are not where they were last year for them. Two more things I'm intrigued by. Top five most intriguing teams going into the year, though we've already talked about like probably seven teams, whatever. I think there is huge bust potential for Jacksonville. Huge bust potential. They didn't upgrade their defense at all. Trevon Walker, you're not really loving what you're seeing thus far. Their number one overall pick last year defensively. Trevor Lawrence still threw four interceptions in the first half of that game against the Chargers, where the Chargers just chargered their way to the very end. I'm just not feeling this. And you know what? I think Vegas is with me here. They're plus 1325 to win the AFC. That's eighth among all teams in the AFC. I'm good with that. I feel like they've gotten a little bit too much shine. And one last thing, intriguing teams this year. The NFC South sucks. It's terrible. It's awful. Like, I think the conventional favorites are the Saints with Derek Carr. I think every Saints fan out there is like, yeah, we wish we had better than Derek Carr, but whatever. I mean, at least we'll be competitive. The Falcons. If you love old school football, you're going to love the Falcons because they're going to run the football a lot. They got Bijan Robinson. They got Cordarrelle Patterson. They got Tyler Allgeier. If you like that old school stuff, they're going to run the ball a million times and they're plus 216 to win the NFC South. There you go, everybody. It's Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Let me tell you about my friends at mybookie.ag. Want me to keep giving you plays? This is the kind of play that you do if you really have stones. But at mybookie.ag, promo code BET975. Maybe you want to make a play on the Heisman Trophy. Do you know what the odds are right now on Labor Day, September 4th, 2023, for Travis Hunter to win the Heisman Trophy? Colorado wide receiver and cornerback who absolutely balled on Saturday, plus 3,500. And again, quarterback's probably going to win it. But, I mean, is the quarterback going to win it 2 years in a row? The same guy? Is that going to happen? Especially when you have a guy who is actually playing like 110 snaps two ways. Like, this is the first time we've seen a two-way football player in God knows how long. And he seemed like he was 100% fine at the end of the game. Travis Hunter at plus 3,500 to win the Heisman. You could do that. MyBookie.ag. Promo code BET975. You're going to get a sweet little deposit bonus if you sign up today. Also, I mean, maybe you're really crazy. Colorado, plus 20,000 to win the college football playoff. Maybe you believe in Deion Sanders that much. I don't know if I'd go that far, but hey, these are all the things that you can do at mybookie.ag. Promo code BET975. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with mybookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. Oh, it's you people.
Tired of being your tram donkeys.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
It feels like it happened a million years ago already, because it was the Big Noon kickoff game Saturday on Fox. Colorado, defending runner-up, TCU at home, ranked number 17. And going into that game, the Horned Frogs were 20.5-point favorites. Now, when I saw that line, I scratched my head because, okay, Texas Christian lost their starting quarterback among other players to the draft. That's not to say that they can't reload, but are they going to step into next season after last year, where at times it felt like they just had a lot of favor? A lot of things broke their way. Should they be 20.5-point favorites against a Colorado team? And I get it. It's a Colorado team that sucked last year, that had one win. But Deion Sanders brought the whole crew. His son, one of the former number one recruits in the country, Travis Hunter, he brought him to Colorado. And I don't know. I've always loved Deion Sanders since I was a kid. When he was on the Dallas Cowboys, when he was wearing the bandana. Yes, he was on the 49ers. He was on the Falcons. I remember Deion Sanders with the Dallas Cowboys. And I get it. This is going to maybe make me no friends here in Houston. But I've said this before. When I was growing up, I did like the Cowboys. I liked them. They were cool. I was just getting into football. I'm 6 years old. I did not know that I was going to end up moving from Massachusetts to Texas and turning this into my home. Okay? I'm just being honest with you here. I've always loved Deion Sanders. Always. And I assumed this was going to work. Now, I didn't think it would happen quite like this right away. But the idea that this Colorado team that is doubted on, hated on by a lot of people because they want to see Deion Sanders fail, since he is doing something that really doesn't feel like it's been done before. Like a superstar ex-player becoming a head coach and pissing a lot of people off by going to the SWAC and then leaving so quickly. There's some people that take issue with that. Listen, it's America, baby. It's the land of opportunity. You find a good opportunity at Division I, take it. I don't think we should be that shocked that this is what happened. I really don't. And part of it has to do with, I don't think TCU is that good, but the other part of it is, man, Deion Sanders is one of the best recruiters by default in the country, literally just by being himself. And people were mad that he was bringing his own players from the old program to Colorado. Guys, Colorado has sucked for a really long time. They used to be awesome. Do you remember Colorado in the mid-90s? They had Cordell Stewart. They had my guy Ted Johnson. Like that in the mid-90s. They were an absolute juggernaut, and they've been terrible since then. And they left the Big 12 for the Pac-12. They're leaving the Pac-12 for the Big 12. It's weird because you would think well, they're in like the perfect college town. They're in Boulder. There's lots of women. There's lots of weed. Like, it's a great time for all. And he goes there, and in this first game, of course, at least in the first game, they were going to show up. They weren't going to get embarrassed. But I did not think that Deion Sanders' son, Shedeur Sanders, would throw for 500-plus yards. And I did not think that Travis Hunter would play every single down, basically. Whatever the case. At halftime, it was very clear something was special. Something special was happening with Travis Hunter. And it also was clear that Deion Sanders is maybe the best thing to happen to college football. And we're talking about the real level of college football. No offense, 1AA. He's the best thing to happen to college football in a really long time. This is a halftime interview. Here is Deion Sanders with Jenny Taft at halftime.
He is him. We missed him on two deep balls. He get those two deep balls. The Heisman is at his crib chilling right now. God bless.
The Heisman is in his crib chilling right now. God bless. How often has somebody put any effort into a halftime interview? They're always miserable, pissed off. They don't want to do it. And Deion Sanders just said that his star player, who is a corner and a wide receiver, that the Heisman is already in his crib. He said that at halftime. This is going to be awesome. This is week one. This is the first game of the year. We're not done. We're not done with Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders, after the game, in a moment that I loved, where, again, Jenny Taft comes over. Deion's there. Travis Hunter comes over. His son, Shedeur Sanders, comes over. He's doing this with his son. How cool is that? And this interview, it's amazing.
Thank you, Jesus. I'm so thankful right now. My son, man.
My pop right here.
My son, my other son.
Yeah.
Man, I'm loving these kids. Rick George for giving me this opportunity, man. This is a blessing. Everybody, Buff Nation, who supported us, and all the hood that had my back, I thank y'all. God, this is good. Woo!
What can you tell me about your defense and the way they came up huge with that stop to get this win?
They surrendered some big plays throughout the game, and we kept teaching was just we need one stop, one stop. But what about the offense? How did they respond? How did these guys respond? I don't know how many snaps he played, but we're going to put a hot tub on the plane for him to make sure he's straight.
Hey, we're excited because we are heading to visit your home next week, Folsom Field. What is your message to the fans of what we can expect from Colorado?
We told you we're coming. We told you we're coming. You thought we were joking. And guess what? We keep receipts. God bless you, America. Ooh, God is good.
I love Deion. This is going to be so fun this year. For better or worse, and I don't know how many wins they get this year. What is eight, nine? Is that maybe the ceiling for them? I'm not sure who their Pac-12 schedule is. I don't know if they're playing USC, if they're playing Washington, who are the two best teams in the conference. But, I mean, how can you not want to watch this, whether you love him or hate him? And I know there are some people out there who hate him. My Kitchen is Dirty, I guess, assumed that I hated him. He asked this question, does Deion make you uncomfortable because he's a confident black man? Piss off with that logic. Also, John, wait, is Deion Sanders black?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
Didn't know. Well, I don't see color.
Oh, okay.
I don't see color. I never have, not once in my life. But King of All Twitches, it seems to be one of those guys who's pushing back. And you know what? I actually get this. I do get the people that are pushing back against Deion. Prime is a hype man, not a head coach. He's a great motivational coach. The game said more about how terrible TCU's defense is. All of those things could be true. All of those things. But I think in 2023, this is what you need. I understand this idea that, like, yeah, you want to have the old school X's and O's guy. And sure, fine. But the game has changed so much. When you have someone like Deion Sanders, you have a level of cool attached to your program that literally no other college football program can bring to the table. And it's a shame that this, I mean, I think with Ed Reed, it probably would have been a disaster because he seems extremely temperamental. And we saw with Bethune-Cookman where he was there for, what, like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something like that before he had like a mental breakdown and said, like, this place sucks, I'm out. Okay. But when you got a guy like this who is as charming as possible, and you're able to recruit the guys that they are able to recruit just because he is there, you know, we talk about like how Gen Z is all obsessed with like stars and fame and all that stuff. Well, how about the guy who essentially brought it to the NFL back in the mid-90s? Deion Sanders was the first brand, essentially, in the NFL. Like, it's prime time. No one's been a better marketer ever. And you know what? Here's the thing. It's a big part of college football, the marketing side of it. And I love this at the very end. Here's his post-game press conference where I'm not sure who he was pointing at, but, man, it must have sucked to have been this reporter who clearly wrote something that wasn't that complimentary of Deion Sanders.
What's up, boss? You believe that? You hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Oh, no. Do you believe that? Huh? Oh, no, no, no. I read through that bull junk you wrote. I read through that. I sifted through all that. Yeah. Oh, no. Come on. Do you believe? You don't believe. You just answered it. You don't believe. Next question.
Incredible. A couple of comments here on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. King of all Twitches continues to push back. Will Prime be back after he gets smashed in conference play? I mean, he's in the Pac-12. I don't know, guys. I don't think that's a very good conference. I mean, forget the whole that it's